Hi, I'm Ann DeLisi, and this is my interview with Detroit chef Max Hardy. The path that he took to get him to his role as a world-class chef and restaurateur is a fascinating one. He now has his own companies providing high-level cooking on private jets, designing chef jackets, teaching the next generation of food industry talent, and opening two restaurants in Detroit, River Bistro and Coop. But his love of cooking and hospitality started when he was a kid.
I mean, I guess, you know, it started from just my grandmother here in Detroit, just like really loving to entertain and host guests over. My family is the Gordys, and so she always used to cook for some of the stars of Motown and have them over. And I guess I was as a kid seeing that, and they used to have card parties and just all get togethers. I remember they go to Hamtramck and go get the sausage and shop on Saturday mornings. And so it was a really cool time to see that. And I think that's kind of how it kind of started happening for me, kind of developing the love for, I guess, hospitality and humanity, I guess. And but my dad was a good cook. You know, he used to love cooking. I remember him just always raving about his barbecue and cooking T-bone steaks that he went down to Eastern Market to buy. And so it was crazy. Now that I moved back to Detroit, I find myself doing some of the same things. But but yeah, I think that's where it started. You know, on my dad's side of the family and my mom's side of the family, they're from Bahamas. So being raised in a house of Bahamian women cooking was really fun and cool to see.
The smell must have been amazing.
Oh, yeah, no. You got the crazy, like, curry everywhere and thyme. I remember just, you know, seeing scotch bonnets and lemons and limes when they made the kunk salad. My mom used to make this thing called bully beef, which is like canned corned beef. She used to steam it down with tomato paste and thyme, onions, garlic, and peppers. And so it's now still one of my favorite dishes to have. And so she'll serve it over grits on the weekends and then rice during the week when we're broke.
So it must still be great to have your mom cook for you, even though you're a chef, you're an accomplished chef and everything. But to be able to go home and have your mom cook for you, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, so when I go down to Miami, I literally have her at the house like every day I'm there. And so one day is boiled fish and grits. One day is...
You give her a menu?
Oh, yeah, for sure. She already knows. Like everyone knows, like when I get there, like just have everything, all my favorites for four days, five days, however long I'm there. But yeah, but I think that's kind of how it developed. And then actually just even my godmother, she was an amazing cook. I remember her baking. Like, so just everyone in my family just had something special that they did.
And
so,
but you had, one of the things that's interesting is a lot of people that I talk to, they talk about the fact that, you know, their grandmas and their mothers or whoever around them cooked, but you had the added experiences of watching them cook for other people and that experience of the reaction to that, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times, I guess, you know, I don't really think of it like that, you know, and now that I'm sitting there talking, I'm like, well, damn, that's like how it really came about, you know, and more so every time I talk about it, just because, like, everyone catered to others. Everyone either cooked for the church or cooked for the family, picnic, or, you know, my mom's side of the family, they cooked for big, you know, big events, and and we had a big family, so it was that's where my love for catering and entertaining kind of, you know, molded.
Your time with Amari Stoudemire.
Yeah.
An interesting adventure, I would imagine.
Right.
You know, not a lot of chefs, not a lot of people, period, would get to have that kind of close proximity and a daily interaction with someone of that stature in that world.
Yep.
What was it like?
Well, I mean, as I look back at it now, it's like I'll never do it again. But, you know, it was like, it was one of those 5 years, 6 years where it was just very intense, you know, like every day, 3-4 meals per day, you know, 10 to 12 people per day, each meal, and then having to cook for the kids and cook for the wife and cook for the nanny and the bodyguard and security and the entourage. And so it was a lot, you know, like I tell people, and a lot of people, when you see me go shopping for them, you know, I'll spend $2,000-$3,000 at a grocery store and like nothing, right? And that's only for like 2 days, you know. So it was like just really, really crazy to see, you know, just how that world lives. But it was also great, you know. I got to travel the world, you know, with them and do some really cool things. We got the chance to do a cookbook together, which, you know, was one of my first cookbook. And then, you know, we just had a lot of fun and we became friends. And so And the reason why I say I won't do it again, just because you become friends and your life become their life become your life. And you become the bodyguard, you become the nanny, you become the driver sometime. You know, hey, chef, can you pack all my watches up and fly them to L.A.? So you on a plane with $2 million worth of watches in your possession, like, you know, what I'm going to do with this, like, right? Right.
You know what's interesting about that is I interviewed, I mean, I didn't interview, but I listened to an interview of Prince's first recording engineer, yeah. Susan Rogers. Mm-hmm. And she was his recording engineer for 5 years wow. during the Purple Rain days yep. and everything. And she was with him all the time,
yeah.
every single bit yep. of the time. And she finally just said, I have to have a life.
Yeah.
And because her life was whatever Prince wanted, and she loved him.
Yep.
And she just said, and that's the way it kind of sounds like that. You didn't have your life.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in my life was a good life, you
yeah.
know, so I could live and drive and eat and, you know, yeah. fly and do all I wanted to do. But is you just, you're at the beck and call, you yeah. know, and they expect you to, you know, be there even when you're not cooking. Like, chef, why don't you, go to the movies? You want to go hang out? You want to go bowling? You want to do it? Like, no, I just want to go home and get some sleep and just chill out. But no, it was definitely truly a great experience.
Sure.
You know, I wouldn't take it back, you know, mm-hmm. for the world, but it's one of those
things. You only need
things.
To do it one time.
Yeah, like, you know, because I started so young in being a personal chef, and I was cooking for celebrities and athletes when it wasn't cool, you know, like to be a personal chef wasn't no one's goal at the time. You know, right. that was always my goal when I was in high school, to be a personal chef for Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
did you ever meet him?
I have. Yep. And so that was like how it kind of came full circle for me. Like, you know, I thought I'd go to NBA. I thought I would cook for Michael Jordan, you know, but he retired and then I didn't go to NBA. And so it was like, okay, now I get to cook for Amari and some of the other, you know, great athletes. And so, yeah, good times though.
And you landed back in the Motor City.
Yep.
Where you belong.
Right.
Where you belong. Talk about the challenges of opening a restaurant. I mean, here's the thing. I think everybody in Detroit's like, oh, there's a new restaurant. Isn't that yep. great? I'm going to go eat.
Right.
It seems so daunting. And one chef said to me at one point, in the middle of all this mess, all I want to do is cook.
Yeah. And that's kind of what you get to, like, you know, this morning. Like, you know, I'm like rushing now to... I got to open two restaurants at 11 o'clock same time, and mm-hmm. one of the cooks got a flu, other cook got a pink eye, and so the chef is running late because it was his birthday party last night, so he hung out late. So now, all right, now what do I do? I'm only one chef and one owner, so I got to, you know, try to figure it out. But and those are some of the pains of, you know, and troubles of having a restaurant. But, you know, I think for chefs, you know, we always say, like, we just want to cook. We just want to just get in the kitchen and just do and make magic in the kitchen, right? But for me... I like the business side of it a little bit. Yes, I love to cook more than anything, but the challenges and, you know, putting out the fires, it kind of mm-hmm. excites you a little bit and it keeps you going. You know, just being in the kitchen cooking every day is great, but that's not what I really would love to do every day. So it's great for me to have restaurants and great for me to be in them and really make it happen. But, you know, being back in Detroit and having a restaurant, presents a lot of different challenges. You know, everyone thinks of, like, Detroit as, like, this new food town, and I think it's becoming that. I think we're not nor close yet. You know, a lot of restaurants are opening, but a lot of restaurants are opening and doing the same thing. A lot of opening restaurants and really not pushing the envelope of community and, you know, training chefs and staff, right? So it's great to open these restaurants, but, you know, what about training? You know, how are you going to open five restaurants with no staff? You know, that's trained and reliable to really make it happen. Mm-hmm. So for the consumer is great, you know, but for the restaurateur and the restaurant owner and investor is a little tough because, you know, hey, I don't have any staff. I open this gorgeous restaurant, but then I got to close in a year because I can't, you know, keep it rolling because I don't have staff to, you know, to make it make sense. Or train servers to really get the food out there. You can be a great chef, but... if the server can't get it to the table, you know, no matter how great I am, it's all garbage, you know, at that point. So, you know, but those are some of the challenges, you know, and I think as we continue to, you know, progress as a city in the food space, I think everyone's got to be on the same accord and stop, you know, reinventing the wheel and kind of just make it all one, you know, kind of community. But I guess that's kind of what I'm here for. So
you're doing a great job. Let's talk about Coop.
Yep.
Why did you open it?
So Coop was something I developed almost 5 years ago. It was just sitting in the archives, just kind of just waiting, I guess. It was supposed to open in Greenwich, Connecticut. I had a client that was being a personal chef for a while, and she was like, hey, chef, I want to open a restaurant, but I want to do something like a, I think she said, a Pollo Tropical out of Miami, out of the South. It's a really cool Caribbean, Latin more flair restaurant. So I designed this concept. It was in Greenwich. It was close to a farm, so I was like, I would do farm-to-table kind mm-hmm. of chicken concept. And then they backed out, like, right at the fifth hour. Like, I was like, okay, well, I'll just put on the, you know, on the back burner for now.
So you had the whole thing planned in your head then?
Yeah, no, logos was done, menu was done, whole design, everything was done, you know, and that's why I was living in New York. And then fast forward maybe 2 years, two and a half years ago, I got a phone call from Detroit Food Lab. And said, chef, would you be interested in opening a restaurant in Detroit in this container space? And I had been coming back and forth, I think, maybe 6 months at this point, doing a few pop-up dinners and so forth and kind of getting the vibe and see what the city's about. And, you know, everybody kept saying, chef, you should move to Detroit, move back home. Mm-hmm. When they called me on that project, I was like, wow, that'd be kind of cool to go into a shipping container. So I moved here last year thinking that it was going to happen last summer, and it just got pushed back. And so, and then I saw everyone that was going into the space, and so Bangkok 96 was going in. So I had gave it a Caribbean-Asian spin when we go to go into Greenwich. So I was like, well, I can't do Asian-inspired. I got to go straight Caribbean or straight something. So I was like, all right, you know what, we're going to go hardcore Caribbean and just pay homage to Jamaica, Bahamas, Trini, Cuba, Puerto Rico, and just kind of have it a nice little spin. Mm-hmm. So if you see the menu, you know, our signature chicken is a jerk chicken. But then I took a guava and lime reduction and added to our barbecue sauce. And then now you have this, you know, Jamaican, Caribbean, guava, Puerto Rican kind of, you know, mixture going on. Yeah, empanada, so coming from Cuba and Puerto Rico. You got a spicy cauliflower, kind of paying tribute to, you know, Trini a little bit, spicy cauliflower-ish. And so many, like, little cool things, you know, I brought in this mac and cheese, but now we're adding cilantro to it and bacon, you know, so kind of just giving it a really cool little flair and flavor. Then we have Mexican corn, but then I Caribbean up a little more and added, you know, versus having just queso fresco and cilantro. I added some coconut flakes to it and a garlic aioli. So just like really like playing with some of the flavors and, mm-hmm. and feel that I have as a chef and then paying homage to some of those islands. Because everybody always think of like Jamaica as, you know, an island. Like, well, you do know it's 500 islands in just, just Bahamas alone. So and that's all. So it's just like, hey, you know, let's have some fun doing it. And let's, you know, let's really create this little cool concept. So I love it. You know, I think it really has been good.
Quickly talk about River Bistro. You have changed the model a little bit.
Yep.
From a full-time restaurant to weekends serving dinner and then focusing on catering, which is a huge part of your history.
Yep. I mean, so River Bistro is my baby. You know, it was the first concept and we weren't supposed to do River Bistro. It was just literally, I was riding down the street one day, saw this space and I was like, wow, what I wonder this little cute little, you know, space was. And so I reached out to the landlord. And actually, I didn't even reach the landlord. This kind of how it happened. Crazy. I was riding by, went to the bookstore. And then on my way back, it was a guy in the parking lot. And so I just pulled up to him and I asked him. I said, do you know who owns this building? He's like, no, I'm waiting for the owner to come now to let me in and see the building. I was like, oh, okay, cool. He's like, do you mind if I look at it as well? He's like, I don't care. I'm going to get it and turn into, he wanted to do a potato head, a restaurant or something, stuffed potatoes. And so the owner comes and let us in, and I'm looking at the space, and I'm like, wow, this could be really dope. So I go back, there's a office area, and then they're using that storage. I'm like, this is the private dining room here, this is my office here, and I'm laying it out of my head, right? So, but the guy really wanted the building. And so the landlord was like, hey, you know, let me know if you guys, you know, want to move forward. He thought I was with him. And so I was like, well, are you going to move forward the building? He's like, yeah, you know, I'm thinking about it. And I'm like, you're thinking about it. Like, so I just like, hey, can I get you a check? And you hold the check and he let me know what happens. And he was like, sure. And I was like, send me over a lease and letter of intent. If this guy doesn't take it, I'll take it. Literally the next day, you know, we signed the lease and a week later we was moving in. So and me and my uncle, we got down and put new floors down and painted, built tables and did the whole thing. And really in four weeks, we had it ready to go. So to see what we've done from start to finish or start to continue and now Ever Bistro has really been good. It's still growing. You know, we're still becoming more food conscious in that area.
Yeah.
We still are used to our fried fish and wings over there for $7. But we're trying to change that narrative and really focus on how do we dine and eat different and look at food and beverage on a different level.
Yep.
You know, I think we're a little behind the eight ball in Detroit when it comes to food and how we look at it and how we dine. As restaurateurs, as chefs, we got to help them, you know, and create that narrative of how we look at it. So, but I think it's happening.
We also talked about the lack of qualified people to work in Detroit's burgeoning food scene and that he's working to change all that.
I think the training component of it is important. So the work that Clary University is doing and coming to the city and being in the heart of the city right on Woodward is really cool. So now you can train the staff and send them out to do externships right all in the heart of the city. So I just became chef resident of Clary University where we'll come in and really help grow their enrollment numbers and just kind of show the city like, hey, I could do the same thing. I could be a chef. I could be a restaurateur. I can be, you know, a food and beverage manager, a bartender, and really do it in the right way and be trained in that manner. So looking forward to their work that, you know, they're going to do and how I can help and push the envelope and get more students trained. It'll be fun to really see, you know, what they're doing and be a part of that and kind of get that off the ground. And I think everyone will benefit from it. Every restaurant, every, you know, restaurant group, all the new hotels is coming in. I sit on the board of Detroit Restaurant Association as well. You know, their focus is like, how do we bring lodging and restaurants all together? And so I think all of this kind of ties in together and kind of, you know, brings it home. You know, it's rewarding to see some of this things happen, to start to see some of the things happen. So, yeah, it'd be fun.
That's my conversation with Chef Max Hardy, who is the executive chef for River Bistro and Coop in Detroit. Visit chefmaxhardy.com to find out more about his many culinary adventures. For WDET, I'm Ann DeLisi.